Welcome to Overtures. This was a beautiful episode of not only catching up with an old friend on her journey, but also one about taking leaps of faith and enjoying the payoff. Perfect during audition season. Content warning for brief mention of sexual assault and alcohol abuse. All links are in the show notes. Take your seats. We'll be starting shortly. Everyone, I hope everyone's doing well and having a good day. You might notice I'm a little bit brighter today. I was so used to doing daytime episodes that this month's episodes have all been in the evenings, which has been great and it's been fun. But I realized I did not have the correct lighting, so apologies for the episodes that were a little darker than normal. My partner was like, "We have a ring light. We can just set it up in a different location." And I was like, "You know what? You're so right. But that's okay. We're here. I can be seen now. So that's always a good thing. And we're just ready to get started. I don't have anything housekeeping wise really to go through today. So we're just going to get straight into it. My cats are a little playful today. So apologies if you hear any fun noises of them playing with the loudest toys, as you'd expect. We'll go ahead and get started. This is episode 59 of Overtures. My guest today is a sober film and TV actress from Bucks County, Pennsylvania, who relocated to Los Angeles in August after spending time living in Philadelphia and New York City. She is known for her role as Kate in Universal Pictures France's new feel-good comedy, Mon Héroïne. She's an Interlochen alumni and former camp counselor who studied creative writing and acting and taught recreational archery. When she's not on set, she's a proud member and web designer of Actors Think Tank and can be found helping actors gather up all their marketing materials so they can put their best foot forward. She and I lived together for just over 6 weeks in the woods of northern Michigan, and we were attached at the hip. Time has definitely passed since then. The math is kind of scary now, but I couldn't be more excited to sit down and catch up at this point in our lives. So without further ado, this is Stacey Marie Kiba.
Hi. Oh my gosh, that introduction is making me cry. I miss being in the woods in northern Michigan. It's so magical there.
It really is. I know that summer was so incredibly special for both of us. It was, yeah. It was such
a
good time.
It was life-changing. And it's on my bucket list to earn enough money in this career so I can buy a little cabin up there and I just want to be there all the time.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And that goes straight into the perfect segue, because one of the first things I love to talk about is how I know my guests, and we know each other from working at Interlochen Center for the Arts. We worked there together as camp counselors. And I believe we're the same age. So I know for me, it was the summer after my freshman year of college. Was that the same for you as well? Or were you a year ahead of me?
That's a great question. I think I finished what was supposed to be my junior year, but I had taken a gap year after my first semester of college because I totally freaked out. I was like, I don't know what I want to do with my life. Yeah. So I think it was in that time period. So I think I was 20, maybe 21.
Okay. I forgot that you were older than me.
I was not 21. I was almost 21.
Almost 21. Oh, yeah. Gotcha. And like we were saying, we both found that to be such a beautiful and formative, for me, it was definitely a formative summer. And I think it was so special for the two of us, getting to be in Michigan, on the lakes, but also a camp counselor for all these incredibly talented kiddos. Cause you had mentioned the archery thing, your bio, it was an arts camp. So you're working with all these incredibly talented kiddos, but at the same time, you're trying to figure out campfires, things like that with them.
It was so funny because all the kids, they just wanted to be creative and be there for art. And then Interlochen is like, but we got to give you the real life camp experience. And so instead of working cafeteria duty, I was like, I'll do recreation and trying to teach. We were doing the younger middle school division of girls, mm-hmm. and to try and teach them how to use a bow and arrow. It was very nerve-wracking for everyone involved. And I just remember always telling the cautionary tale of, if you miss this target, historically, chipmunks have been skewered, and you don't want to skewer a chipmunk.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And so luckily, no one skewered a chipmunk while I taught them. And then
casualties.
The trick is, like, really, if you've seen Princess Diaries 2 with Chris Pine teaching Anne Hathaway how to shoot the bow and arrow, everything he says is on point. It's perfect. It's how you do it. And it was really fun.
I love that. That's such a blast. Well, and it was cool because I know that was my first summer at Interlochen, but it wasn't your first. You were a camper there at one point too. Yeah. I would love to hear what that was like, to go from like being a camper one year and then being like a counselor.
Yeah. Well, it was very exciting because, well, so I loved writing in middle school and high school. Because I was very bad at it first. And so historically, the way that I work is, if I'm really bad at something, I'll just like go all in on it and just do that all the time. And so for a long time, it was writing. I really wanted to like be a New York Times bestselling author, Pulitzer Prize winner.
Yeah.
And my parents, like, we came from like a low income situation. My mom was very sick growing up, but there wasn't a ton of funds to go around. So the fact that I even got to go to Interlochen in the first place, which, you know, a lot of people, I think, hear of Interlochen and they're like, you know, high class, upper class people, like, who can afford that? But my parents managed to make it happen for me, which was the biggest deal in the world. And I was 9th grade going into 10th grade. And I just did a 3-week session because that was all that was offered for that department.
Right.
And I was so shy. But it was just so magical. I think I won camper of the year or something, or camp like of the session.
Yeah.
Whatever the camper award was, I won that. But I was very shy. And so then to go back, I guess like 5 years later, and to be like energetic and outgoing for kids.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a very different experience. And I don't know. I just wonder if I were to go back now, like, what would that experience be like?
Right, right.
You know, totally another phase of my life.
Exactly.
It's magical, but, like, I just, it's so beautiful thinking about, like, walking through the woods and you just hear music. Just playing out of all the practice cabins and the lake and everything. And so, yeah. It was like a shy Stacy and then energetic, outgoing Stacy, two totally different sides of
the coin. Very full circle in that way.
Yeah.
I love that so much. And obviously you work more in like film and things like that now, but I do know that you had your starts in theater. So I would love to hear how did you first get started in theater?
Oh my gosh. Well, before I answer that, I guess it's sort of me answering it. I just had a flashback of us doing Harry Potter.
It was like somehow reenacting. I don't remember whether it was like all 8 books or like whether it was just a particular book, but I remember like, I think it might have been like Erin, I think her name was. We were like, okay, we need to put together the whole thing and act it out for the campers. I don't even remember the context.
I don't either. But I do remember Erin. She was also like in my cabin.
Yes.
And I had a really bad haircut at the time. It was like a pixie haircut that was growing out. and never again do I think I will, unless it's for a role and they pay me a lot of money. I don't want to go back to that phase with the hair. But I was Harry Potter, which was, and I think I had the scar. I had the scar like on the wrong spot of my face. Like, I don't know. It was like supposed to be on this side and it was on this side. I don't know. But I got into theater because I really loved writing, and I also had like ADHD as a kid, but it was totally never diagnosed. Like my parents were just like, don't believe in that, like you're just hyperactive. And so I always struggled like getting through classes because I was just like, I need to move, or I'd be like making a bunch of lists. And so originally I went to college for, it was the only college I applied to, Westchester University, Pennsylvania. And I wanted to be a writer, and my parents and family was like, you can't be that, like, that's a terrible idea. So I was like, all right, I'll go to be an English teacher with a concentration in writing. And after that first semester in college, all my friends were like, I can't wait to student teach. And I was like, that sounds really terrible. I don't want to do this. So I took a gap year. And then I came back and I was like, what am I going to do? And I thought theater is like, you know, English classes, but you're up and you're moving around.
Oh, that's such an amazing, beautiful connection to make.
Yeah. And so, because I could still do all the literary analysis and write less papers and like understand it better. And still tell stories. And so that first semester when I came back, I was still an English major, but I started involving myself in the theater department with like plays and stuff that they did. Mm-hmm. And then it was, then I went to Interlochen. That's when I was a counselor. And then I came back that fall semester and I was officially a theater major. And that's kind of how the transition happened. And also it just scared me because even though I was more energetic as a camp counselor that summer, like I was still very shy and I was not to where I am today. Like I mentioned, I love to throw myself into things that I'm bad at or things that scare me. I think it's things that really scare me. And so being vulnerable and telling stories and being out there is very terrifying.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But it's also then becomes that much more rewarding on the other end of it.
Yeah, it definitely does.
Yeah. And so then I'm curious, what was like that overture moment for you where you realized like that light bulb of like, I want to do this like for a career. And now this could be in relation to like acting and as a whole, or it could be specifically like camera work. Whichever you'd like to speak to, I guess, for your own self.
Yeah. Okay. So I would say there are like two parts to this. So the first part was throwing it all the way back to seventh grade. so I grew up, my mom was a softball coach to my cousins, and like she was very outdoorsy, sporty, and she wanted me to try to follow in her footsteps, play softball and everything, and I was really bad at it. Like I used to get hit by the softball when I was up to bat, and the umpire would say, it's okay, is that your cat?
Yeah, just crawling all over the desk.
I love it. So I used to like get hit by the softball up to bat and the umpire would be like, you're not allowed to walk to first base. Like you could have avoided it. That's how bad I was. And so I remember going into school, I think it was like on a Thursday, and at the lunch table, my whole softball team was there. And they're all talking about this new movie coming out called Twilight. And I was like, oh, that sounds like fun. Like they were all planning to go to the movies the following night. And I was not invited. Like the table just got quiet. And I was mortified. I was like, why can't I go? And they're like, well, you didn't read the books. And I was like, okay. sorry. And they're like, well, you can't go. And so I went home crying to my mom. And she's like, well, do you want to try to read the books? And at that point, I was a very slow learner. Like, I had special teachers to help me get better at reading out loud. And there was talk about, like, holding me back a grade, stuff with that. And because I was just really bad at reading. And so I was very afraid of it. And I remember in sixth grade, I had to go to a teacher and read Dr. Seuss books out loud into a microphone. It was like, I hated my life. And so seventh grade, I did not read anything. And I was so afraid of the Twilight books because they're like this big.
They're huge.
And so my mom took me to the bookstore to get them. And I tried reading it. It was a compromise. You try reading this book, I will take you to the movies. And I couldn't do it. And so I guilt tripped her. She took me to the movies and I just remember sitting there and being like, I love Kristen Stewart. She's so cool. I want to date a vampire. Stephanie Meyer like wrote these books in their movies now. And like, that's really cool. Mm. And so I came home and suddenly reading was not an issue. Because I love the story so much. So right. I was just reading this book and I was like, oh, that happened, that happened. I remember in the movie when that happened. It was really easy to get through Twilight. And then the other books just, like, I had to read them. I was too invested at that point.
Yeah.
And so for a long time, I thought, like, that spurred me to want to write. But it was also, like, there's something else there. And that was the whole acting component that I just like tried to ignore for a very long time. And so I just always knew like that was a really great way to storytell. And people can say whatever they want about Kristen Stewart. I love her. I love her personally, and not just because of Twilight, but because of the character she takes on, I think is so cool.
Yeah.
But so then, you know, I was doing the writing and then I was doing theater in college. And then I was like, okay, I had a sexual assault happen in college. And so I dropped out. I like left for the semester and they're like, okay, the school is on top of this, investigating it. And then right before I went back for that fall semester, they dropped the case, called me a liar, basically.
I'm so sorry.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And I was so afraid to be on campus. And my dad said, this is your last chance you have at college because you took a gap year and then you left mid-semester. If you go back now and you can't handle it, no more college. Three strikes, you're out. And so I went back determined, and I lasted 3 weeks and I had the biggest meltdown. And so I remember part of that was I had told my college advisor, when I was leaving and, you know, my friends knew and they were all in the theater department and like, gossip there spreads like wildfire. And so when I came back for that fall semester, everyone looked at me like with so much sympathy and like I did not know how to function as a human being. And when I went out after that 3 weeks, it was like the biggest mess ever. Like and so I was just like, and this was in Westchester, which is part of the Philadelphia suburbs.
Yeah.
And so I was like, if I want to act, I can't, like, I don't want anyone to ever see me from my college years ever again. Mm. Like, I can't see them because, like, I was embarrassed and nervous and traumatized and even though they didn't do what happened to me, like it was just like the second wave of almost like judgment or like people not knowing the full story, and just I just
yeah.
So I stopped acting, and I vowed never to do it again. And that was in 2017. And I got like a big girl job in real estate. I got my real estate license and, you know, tried to move on to my, on with my life. But as an artist, you probably know that desire never goes away.
Yeah.
Never, ever. Like you can try to bury it as much as you want, and it won't go away. And so then in March 2019, I was like, okay, let's change. I don't want to do theater. I don't want to be in the Philadelphia theater market ever. Mm-hmm. But I thought back to Twilight, and I was just like, it was on screen acting that got me excited. So Let me try that. And luckily in Philly, there were a couple of classes, but the one that I went to, I really loved. It's called Actors Lab Philly. And I was nervous because I was like, what if someone I know is in this class? Or what if someone in this class knows someone that knows what happened? Like, I was so paranoid.
Yeah.
But since it scared the shit out of me, I was like, all right, we're doing this.
Yeah.
And so I would go to class, and by the end of class, one, everyone was so good. I was the worst one in the room, which is already like embarrassing enough, but like, that's how you have to get better.
Yeah.
I would sprint to the bathroom. I would have like the biggest like underarm sweat. I was hyperventilating. Like I couldn't breathe. And, back then, the whole incident of the sexual assault really made me realize just how bad of a drinker I am. Like, I never managed it. And The night of the assault, I was sober. My date wasn't. And so then drinking, it was like a, like out of spite almost to the universe. Mm. And so after all those classes, my urge would be like, this is the worst feeling ever. I need to get rid of it. Like, I really want to drink. Except I have to drive home. Like, I can't do that. So my coping mechanism very quickly became sour candy of just throwing as much like sour stuff in my mouth as possible to like where it was very painful. And I'd like spit it out and then my mouth would be numb. And like all my anger would be gone. Like it was the most ridiculous coping mechanism. But that's like how it was for the first 6 months of on-camera film acting class. And once that hurdle started to go away and I became more comfortable in this environment, and I realized I was also doing a ton of work on myself. And once I realized, okay, no one cares that much about you. Like, people aren't gossiping here. Like, you're okay. People actually are glad that you're in this class. Like, this is not gossipy college theater anymore. Yeah. Like, you're okay. It started to get a whole lot better. And then I started really liking my class. And so the overture moment, I don't know exactly what that was.
I think it sounds like a whole journey there, but at the same time, I feel like it does go back to Twilight. So funnily enough, like hindsight is 2020. Well, and it's amazing to see like where you've come this far in terms of like your acting itself, because you've shared your reel with me that we can watch for a moment. And it's so well put together. So I'm excited to watch it real quick.
Thank you. Yeah.
Security?
No, security, please.
Oh yes, let me just call Miss Julia and tell her the entire cast and crew of Beverly Hills 90210 is here working for her.
No.
Gentlemen, will you please escort these ladies out?
No, wait.
Okay. I'll see you back here. We're not going
No, no,
back.
No, no, no.
Nope. Oh, don't forget this.
I don't want to go to jail, please.
Au revoir.
Well, I am involved. Don't tell me you're trying to protect me.
I am.
How am I any safer if I'm attacked while running out to get an iced coffee? I was sure I could beat him if I kept drawing, so I picked up card after card, and then he laid down an ace queen.
As interesting as I find your poker exploits, Ms. Crown.
You're drawing dead, Agent Park. You've got nothing on me. But Chi Omega's so huge. I can make some useful connections.
They don't have a great reputation. As your advisor, I say no.
Can I just try? Try to do both, I mean. Well, I should have reacted better. Swerve to miss him, hit the brake, anything. If I had done anything, Cassie would still be here.
Lots of really, really amazing clips in there. So
thank you.
Yeah, it's so exciting to see all the amazing stuff you've been able to work on. I'm just so proud of you. And I want to also say thank you for being open to sharing your experience and your journey with me here on this show. Again, it's things that are better to talk about, but also it can be really hard to share. So thank you for that.
No problem.
Of course.
I think we all have like a very unique journey of like our artistic career, and it's kind of like hindsight. When you look back, you see how things fall into place, even though at the time they could have been really hard or very unexpected. And you're like, how is this going to benefit me? And then later on, you're like, oh, that makes so much sense now.
Yeah, I 100% relate. And something that you've mentioned to me is about like taking crazy leaps of faith in terms of like what we wanted to talk about here. And I would say recently, give or take, moving from the East Coast out to LA would be one of those. Would you agree?
Yeah. Yeah. It was, I would say that is the second one. Well, there's a few, but the first one was quitting my job. My nice, sexy job in real estate with like nice paychecks. 2 weeks before the pandemic happened, for a part-time job to be an actor, at a dance academy in Philly. And on my first day of work, they said, don't come in because the pandemic happened. Mm-hmm. And my dad was like, you're the biggest idiot ever. But I got my cat Madeline. They gave me a cat that lived at the dance academy. And then the second one is, moving across the country, which is something I'd wanted to do since I was 18. It's just been a lot of big changes the past few years. And then going to France on a whim. That was also the terrifying one.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you feel more settled in LA now that you've been there for a little bit?
Yes and no. So, it's funny. So I moved out here the start of August. And my boyfriend's mom ended up moving into our one bedroom apartment. And like, they're super close, and like, it needed to happen at that point in time. And so for the first 6 or 7 months of living here, I was sleeping on a sleeping bag on the living room floor.
Oh my gosh.
And now living situation has changed a little bit, and now we're finally on a mattress in the bedroom. So it's just, yeah, I mean, I guess I would say I'm like more settled, but I'm also just really trying to figure out routines that make me feel good and secure. Because I had this whole nice morning routine on the East Coast, and then I moved here, and nothing that I used to do fell back into place here. My sleep schedule is very messed up still, but you know, I do go to the gym and I go to the sauna, and that feels really good. And like, a lot of good has happened here. And so, yeah. But I'm still not fully grounded. They say it takes like a year or two to just like plop in.
Yeah. 100%. Because there's so many different things involved when you're moving entirely across the country. Like it makes sense to take that time. Yeah.
What's Don't up? Tell the California DMV this, but whenever I go in to, I still have Pennsylvania plates and tags. So whenever I go in, just like, I have to tell them that I just moved here like 5 days ago. Cause they have this ridiculous, like 10 day rule. Like you have to go in within 10 days or else you get all these fines.
I feel like New York had something similar and I definitely went in like a few months. And granted, it's one of those things that I'm like, I'm not driving in New York. So it's not that big of a deal, but they're like, mm-hmm. you need to have a New York ID. If you have a New York address, I'm like, I'm sorry. That. I've been busy. Give me some time. So yeah. I'll keep it a secret from the DMV. I will not.
Thank you.
Will not write that. And I know we're going to talk about the huge movie that you got to do here in a bit, yeah. but I always love to ask people who are in the union, how did you get your SAG card?
I'm not in the union.
You're not. Okay. Wasn't sure how that worked because it was a French movie.
Yeah. So everyone, like I've been meeting with a lot of people recently, like managers and stuff, and that's always there.
The first thing.
And I'm like, I'm not even eligible. Like
that's so funny.
Because the film, it's Universal, they only do two French movies a year, and they filmed half in France and half in New York City. Mm-hmm. And when my first manager that I had in New York found it, it was on Casting Networks, and the breakdown of it was indie French film seeking supporting role. And like non-union. And I was just like, and it was like $450 a day under five. And I was like, okay. And like, I auditioned for it on like Halloween of 2021. I don't even know what time it was in France. Cause it was like a live Zoom with the director and a casting director. But yeah, I didn't know it was Universal even until like 3 days after we wrapped. Like, there was no union card involved, nothing like that. I was just happy to be paid more than $125 a day.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
That's so cool. But that's really fun that you get to be like, I did a whole like feature film for another country. I still non-union, but I have the experience.
Yeah. It's really interesting because they always say, okay, don't join the union until you absolutely have to.
Right.
Because like they want you to get as much experience as possible.
Yeah. And, particularly with Screen Actors Guild. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm like, I need my SAG card right now. Like I want it so bad. Patience is key. Yeah. But you know what, like casting directors have always said, if they want you, they want you. It doesn't matter. They'll Taft Hartley you.
Exactly.
And that hasn't stopped me from getting like really big auditions the past couple of months. If I booked one of those projects, it would like bypass the whole eligibility thing and it would force you to become. But yeah, no, I'm still non-union.
Well, the fact that you're getting your foot into the door of auditions like that is a fantastic sign. And I know it's coming. I know it's coming for you.
Thank you.
I would love to know. So then if you auditioned on Halloween for the film that you were in, Mon Heroine, if you auditioned on Halloween, how was that turnaround process? Like how quickly did it all come together?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. So I guess technically it was a Zoom callback, although it was like I didn't have the preliminary audition because it was a more minor role. They just like I had to play, not to judge my character, but bitchy American girl next door, Devil Wears Prada vibes.
Yes.
Is this girl.
As we saw in that first part of the clip on your reel.
And So I guess my manager saw it and saw the breakdown on Casting Networks, submitted my headshot and reel like you always do. And they're like, you know, basically they're casting off of your headshot.
Yeah.
And then the Zoom callback was just to, you know, make sure that you could act and that the director liked you. And so I remember I was going through a breakup at the time, and I was miserable. And I was supposed to go to this event on Halloween with the, and I knew the guy and his new girlfriend would be there. And I was just like, no, I'm not going to that. And so I went, I was like, obviously I'm going to do my audition.
Yeah.
Even though earlier that day I didn't want to get out of bed. And so I actually had this backdrop, this pink one. I thought it was very fitting.
It's perfect.
Yeah. Thank you. And so I, full honesty, I get stage fright, like still, like I get nervous before auditions, especially live ones. And so I just went in with no expectations. And I remember saying, I got the sides and I was like, oh, obviously I know how I'm going to play this. But they asked me, do you have any questions? And I've never said this in an audition before, but I said, actually, no, I know exactly how I'm going to play this character. But after I audition, I am super open to feedback and collaborating. And they're like, great. And I was just like, internally, I'm like, okay, great. Let's do this. I'd never been that confident before. And then the director liked it. And I remember she laughed during the audition. I swear to God, like, cause they're 9 hours ahead. So it had to have been like 3 a.m. there. I don't know.
Wow.
but the casting director was a New York casting director, and I ended the audition. It was super short, super efficient. I texted my manager and I said, that felt really good. I think I booked it. I just had this feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And then on Monday, because I think Halloween was like a Saturday, on Monday she texted me and she said, you booked it. And wow. I've never had that feeling since on doing an audition. That I, like that really good feeling. Like there's some that have come very close.
Yeah.
But it's almost like no news is bad news in this industry.
Yeah.
Then I remember when I was in France, I had the opportunity to go get coffee with the director and we talked for like 2 hours and she just said, you came in and did your audition. And I just thought you were like, you know, super cute, like cute as a button, knew the character, well put together. And she's told the casting director apparently right after I auditioned, she's like, all right, cool. I'm done. I don't need to see anyone else.
And, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
That's, I can imagine that. Like, you're like, I'm going to take that with me now, like forever.
Yeah. Yeah. It just, Noemi is so sweet. Everyone on that production was so sweet. And so, you know, it was almost as big of a deal for her as it was for me, like making this yeah. film. Because this is like her first feature film. She's done a lot of other stuff. Like basically she has a production company in France, in Paris, where she does a lot of trailer work and like promotion stuff, where if a trailer is released in English, she'll like convert it to French.
Mm.
And so she knows like everyone and does directing on like other people's sets and stuff, and she's made some short films, but yeah, this was like her baby, because it's based on her true life experience. So
yeah, I was like watching the trailer before and I was picking up what was happening, but that's really cool then to make that connection of like, oh, this is like this director's story, coming from France to New York trying to get a script produced, essentially, right? That's the the plot of it. Yeah.
Yeah. She comes, so she originally came in summer 2001 to get her script in front of Julia Roberts. And, you know, she didn't have an agent. She did not have a lawyer. And so everyone is going to say, no, 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 no. It's not how we do things here. Yeah. And then, you know, someone was like, I like you. Like, I'll be nice and we'll kind of like see what we can do. And so it's exciting. You're all just going to have to watch the film to find out how it ends.
I know. I'm so excited to hear like more about it. One quick question before I ask about possible like premieres and things like that. How many days did you get to personally work on set? Because I obviously we have that short clip from before, but I wasn't sure if there was any additional parts. Yeah. Was it a day player situation or a little bit longer?
So I actually got to work for 3 days, which was wild to me at the time, because I mean, it's still wild to me. Like that was my first big project. But it was, you know, when I got the script in the audition, it was like, okay, under 5. And I was like, okay, cool. And then on the other days, I thought, oh, maybe they'll just need me to basically do background. Mm-hmm. But I did end up making it into 6 scenes, all speaking. And then I had a scene where you heard my voice on the phone. Mm. And one of my scenes got cut. Like it was not fully cut, but shortened.
Gotcha.
So I did have other lines and like, I think I had 3 total outfits. And my characters, like they had the most fun working on me with my hair and makeup.
They're like, let's get as kooky as possible and like have fun with it.
Yeah. Like I remember I had this purse, I got it at Francesca's, but it's like this mini pink purse that you can't even fit your phone in. And she just carries it around like the office. It's so ridiculous.
I love that so much. That's fun when you get to have like costume pieces or props that like inform your character so much. Cause you're like, oh, I can do stuff with this. This is going to be fun.
When I showed up to set, I didn't know the scale of this, the budget, anything. Because historically, when I had done indie feature films, mm-hmm. you never see the light of day of them. Yeah. ever. And you're like, okay, are they going to feed me? Am I ever going to get footage? Am I going to get paid? Transportation, stuff like that. But I showed up and all these streets in New York City are shut down for this thing. And then they're like, okay, I already knew ahead of time that there would be hair, makeup, and wardrobe. But they said, still bring like your own stuff because we might want to mix and match. Mm-hmm. But of course, they dressed me in this very not my style, Dolce & Gabbana dress for one of the scenes. And the price tag was still on this dress and I just looked at it and like,
and you're like,
ugh. And then like, you know, they did my hair and makeup and then they had like a chef, like a great chef, like cook all of our meals and everything. and like the wardrobe, the woman in charge of wardrobe was just like, had me like put jackets and stuff on top of me, like when it was like lunchtime. So I didn't spill anything on like this really expensive blouse.
Yeah.
So that was all very wild to me. And I was like, okay, so maybe I'll get my footage this time. Like
you're like, this might be different. I don't know. Yeah. There's just a few clues.
Yeah. And so then after filming, because I was also commuting. At this point, I wasn't living in New York. I was living at my dad's house in Bucks County, which is about 1.5 hours outside of New York.
Yeah.
And I wanted to save money. So I was waking up at 4 a.m. every single day and driving to set to save money. And then it was right before Thanksgiving that we filmed. I got stuck in the worst Thanksgiving traffic getting out of the city on the last day. And then I think it was like a day or two later, I was updating my acting website and I was Googling it. Mm-hmm. And on, like, they had just updated IMDb and they said Universal.
And you were like,
yeah, I was screaming and my dad's like, Stacey, what's wrong? What's wrong? Like, are you okay? Are you hurt? I was like, like, I was hyperventilating on my computer and he's like, are you like choking on something? What, like, what's I was like, Universal? Like, this is you like racist. It was very wild and exciting.
That's so funny. And then you got to attend the premiere in France, yeah?
Yeah.
What was that like?
Really scary. It was so scary. Yeah, so I never thought that I would travel outside of the United States. I mean, I'd been to like Canada and Cancun and the Bahamas as a kid.
Yeah.
But to go to Europe, yeah. Like to go that far away was not something I ever anticipated. And when we wrapped, I was talking to the director and she said, oh yeah, like the premiere will like be here in New York like next November, like mm-hmm. in a year. I was like, okay, cool. And I told my dad and I was like, do you want to be my date? And he's like, obviously, yes. Like I want to be your date. And then like the date was moving along and I was following all the preview showings that they were doing for promotion. And then it just kind of seemed like maybe it's not happening in New York. And so mm-hmm. I was always talking to the director and I said, is there going to be a showing in New York? And she said, I'm working on it. And then I didn't hear anything. And then the day got even closer and I saw that they announced on December 12th, the premiere will be in Paris. And I asked her and she's like, if you can come, like, I'd love to have you. Mm. And so basically, like, and I'm not, like, you know, number one on the call sheet.
Yeah.
Like, Universal is not flying me out there.
Right.
And so, but I was like, on my deathbed, I will regret this if I don't go.
Yeah.
And so basically I had moved to LA and that was a very expensive, didn't have any savings, credit cards maxed out. And I was like, I don't know how I'm going to do this. Like I'm a freelance web designer. Like I don't have all this money laying around to go travel. And there's this, so I'm a member of Actors Think Tank, which is like a networking group. And our one guest, his name's Brian Herzlinger. He, in 2002 or 2004, he made this documentary called My Date with Drew about how he won $1,100 on the game show Taboo. And instead of paying for his bills for a month, he's like, I'm going to make a documentary about me trying to get a date with Drew Barrymore. And so he does that.
Oh my gosh.
And he was telling this story on Actors Think Tank. And I just thought, like, I need to go to France. Like, because I was thinking, okay, I'll have like a web design client come through. I'll use that money. I'll try to get out loans. But like, I have to go there. Like, who cares about my credit cards that are already in default? Like, I need to go. And so basically every day from like the week before Thanksgiving up until 48 hours before the premiere, I was like applying for any loan, like just like anything. And it was like, decline, decline, decline. Like,
oh gosh.
Why would we loan you money? And then it was, I think Friday night. And the premiere was Monday and a loan went through and they said like, we'll cover your like hotel and your flight. And so I got to go.
Oh
and I and then like I had some web design clients come through and I was just like, okay, cool, that's amazing, I need that. And I found my dress at a thrift shop here for like $24. And I thank God I had my passport like all ready to go. But yeah, I got to go. And I just remember calling family members and being like, okay, you've traveled internationally. How does this work? are they going to decline my card? Like, what do I do with my cell phone? And I was just so green on everything. And so I think it was the best acting lesson in my entire life of like how to win your objective, because I couldn't miss any flights. I couldn't be there any extra days. Like my big excursion in the city was like, you know, walking around outside of my hotel room, like walking to the Eiffel Tower. Like I didn't have the luxury to go do all these fancy things.
Yeah.
I took the subway to the premiere because it was the cheapest option. And it was, but it was just so amazing. I remember getting ready for the premiere and I bought one of those outlet converter things.
Yeah.
And I was trying to steam my dress, but I didn't know in Europe or in France the whole voltage thing. And so I blew out the electric in my hotel room. So then I had to do my hair with like no appliances. And then my dress, it was like a corset. And I was like trying to like tighten it and then taking the subway to the premiere. And it was on the Champs-Élysées near the Arc de Triomphe. And like, I just remember crying, like, because it was right before Christmas and everything has all the fairy lights. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, there's a massive crowd outside. And then like, they just like opened up like the like little red thing and they're like, okay, you go through. And then like, I put my stuff down in the green room, said hi to people, and then did the photo call, and there were 30 plus men and women shouting at me in French. So like, look this way, like over here. And it was just crazy. And I'm a big believer in manifesting and like mm-hmm. visualizing. And I knew that going to see myself in a film playing on the big screen would like attract more roles to me. Like it would just make me believe that I'm an actor.
Yeah. Getting to see it and go, this is possible.
Yeah.
More of this can happen.
Yeah. And people like laughed at my character. And people had such a great time and they called us all up on stage, and the band Pure Sang, the composers, they played beforehand and there was a standing ovation and the after party, and like people were coming up to me and I was like, why are you coming up to me? Like, and they're like, you're so funny. You're such a bitch. And like, but you're so nice. And I just was like crying. Like it was just amazing. And then it was like I was Cinderella because the subway stops at 12:52 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, needed to leave to get the subway to get back to my hotel, or else I would be walking back 45-minute walk through Paris, which I did not feel comfortable doing, even though it's a very safe city.
Yes.
But it was just so remarkable. And then, yeah, I was talking to Noemi. We got coffee and I just got to meet some really amazing people. And I was like, this is possible. Like, I'm an actor. Like,
yeah.
This trip, damn it, I'm an actor. That's what I'm doing. Yeah. And then it's almost like, you know, the pumpkin, the carriage goes back to being the pumpkin. And like, luckily, like I didn't miss my flight because I landed back in the United States. I only had my business debit card. That was the only card that worked. My dad will kill me if he hears this podcast, but like my personal checking account was like closed because of like not having any money in it. All my cards were like defaulted. And so there was one business checking account that I could use. And it was a MasterCard, so it worked over there. And I landed back in the United States with 53 cents.
Oh, my God.
And I was just like, I did it.
You're like, I made it. Okay, now let's go from here.
Yeah, and but, you know, pictures speak like 1,000 words. And my agent said, do not land back in the United States without photos of you at this event, because I honestly went there not just to for the experience and like me believing in myself, but you know, something to help move my career forward, like move the needle.
Yeah.
And now since I have those photos, I've been getting really great meetings with managers and entertainment lawyers, and getting called in for Sears regular auditions and leads. And
because they see you on like at a like full-fledged premiere and go, okay, she knows what she's doing.
Yeah. And then I'm thinking, when are they gonna figure me out? Like, I'm not in SAG. Like, I have, like, you know, I was originally in under five, and then they let me work a few extra days. Like, when are they gonna figure me out? That's like, so and so it's this battle of like really believing in myself right now and knowing that I can do it. But if you look at my acting resume, you'll see Drexel University, Drexel University, Drexel University, like all these student films, and then Universal. And people don't know that film here.
Yeah.
It has been sold to Netflix, so that's super cool.
That's awesome.
And I don't know, if we hit a certain amount of ticket sales over there, they might have one in New York, but I know they're also trying to do film festival stuff, so I don't really know what's going to happen, but I know it's going to be on Netflix at some point. And so right now, since I have my clips that I share with people, but I really have to just get them to believe in me and tell them my story and be like, I'm not afraid to take these giant risks to move the needle in my career. Like, I need someone that believes in me like that. And that's what gets people interested.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, my reel is put together pretty well. But then, like, people, some people are jerks in the industry, and they'll be like, a lot of that stuff is self-produced. Like, you paid someone to like make it. And it's like, yeah, I did, because Drexel University, those kiddos, they're never giving me my footage. Like, I, you know, it's like chicken and the egg thing. So it's like, I'm just trying to get people to believe in me, and I have to believe in myself. And some people aren't going to like that, because, like, fair, why would they? Like, if I'm not making a certain amount, they're not going to make a certain amount.
Right. It's like, it becomes business.
They don't want to spend time to develop people. Like, they want to make money. I want to make money. Like, God.
You're like, me too, but
I need to build that up from 53 cents, which it's better now.
Good.
It's not great, but it's better. And so it's just, it's wild. So it's just, I'm at this weird point in my life of just really like doubling down on like believing in myself. And I feel like every single day I'm writing one of those like persuasive essays.
When you're like, okay, let's go. I mean, that's what half of these business meetings and things are about. It's selling yourself as the actor who is doing this thing, and to persuade them, I'm the one you want. This is why. Mm-hmm. And I applaud you for making these amazing connections and being able to have that in mind of like, I'm going to take this in and be like, wow, I'm at a premiere of a film that I was in France, but also still having that in the business set in the back of your mind where you're like, wait a second, I can use this to my advantage.
Yeah.
You got to do both. And I think that's incredibly important, because if you're doing one, not the other, I think you don't get as much out of it. And so I think that's really smart of you.
Thank you. Yeah. And no, my dad, once he found out it was Universal, he's like, great, cool. Are you moving back in? Like, you did it. You did it. He's like, you literally did it. You were in a Universal film. You went to the premiere. Most people on the planet Earth cannot say they've done that. And he's like, cool, you won. And I was like, no, Dad, I did not win. Like, I am just starting. This is like the start. And it's really just about like how hard you can push yourself. Because there's a lot of days, like, when I don't hear something back from, like, a series regular audition, or, like, I had something that was sent to producers, and, like, you don't hear back, or you hear the definitive no they want with someone else, it's, like...
It's tough.
It's really hard. It's so hard. Like, you face more rejection in a year than people face in their lifetime.
Yeah, 100%. And I think it brings us back again to what we were even talking about at the beginning, where it's like, whether we want to try and push this art that we love away or not, we're going to keep back coming back to it if this is what we're meant to be doing.
Yeah. I mean, I was just telling my boyfriend, I was like, you know, fuck, like, sorry for cursing. Like, no, I want a regular job some days, because I'm like, it would be nice to have that steady income.
Yeah.
But we've both been like, we've burned the ships. Like, I have not had a traditional job in 3 years. Like, where would I start in a traditional job? Like, at the bottom. And he's older than me, and he'd also start at the bottom. And it's like, cool, we could play that, like, escapist fantasy, changing our life and becoming normal for probably like 2 months, and then we'd be like, what are we doing? Like,
exactly.
And it's, you know, everyone needs a survival job and to pay their bills, but it's like, how much of yourself can you dedicate when, like, that's not the thing that motivates you?
100%. 100%. And it's crazy because we've already gotten to an hour, 4 minutes. Like, we've been just yakking away. I know we could talk for hours more. And I love that about this. But I want to make sure we wrap up this episode. Where can people find you on social media, websites, that all that good stuff?
Yeah, sure. So everything is Stacey Marie Cuba, STICEYMARIEKEBZMBOYA. So my website, Instagram, and then if you want to reach out, my email is hi@stacymariecuba.com.
Amazing. And that's where people can get in contact with you about, like, web design things, as well as acting and all that good stuff.
That's like my survival job, is I look at people's materials and just help them put their best foot forward. So if you want to get in touch, you can reach me there.
Amazing. Amazing. Yeah. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter @Laura_Marjoram and my website, www.lauramarjoram.com. You can find this show on Instagram @OvertureSShow, as well as on YouTube. If you're watching the visual version of this, you are in fact on YouTube. So yay, congrats. Like, subscribe, all those good things that always helps the channel. We're also on Spotify and Apple Music. So if you're wanting to listen on the go, you can check out episodes there. I'm pretty up to date on those. So this one will be coming in a week or two. And then we have a Ko-fi page. So if you feel so inclined to donate a coffee or anything of that sort, any proceeds are always great to go towards this show and help me keep it running so I can talk to amazing guests like Stacey and promote them as best I can. Stacey, do you have any final thoughts for viewers live and in the future?
Final thoughts, just to be brave and to put yourself out there, because that's the higher the risk, the higher the reward. But take care of yourself while you're at it, because it's not easy, but you deserve it. So just be confident in yourself.
Absolutely. 100%. Thank you so much, Stacey. We will see you all later, and I hope you have a wonderful evening. Bye, everyone.